Okay, the next case set for argument is appeal number 31131, State of South Dakota versus Shamir Al-Madani. Jeffrey Beck will be arguing on behalf of the appellant interested parties. Kylie Beck is arguing on behalf of the defendant, Mr. Al-Madani. No relationship between the parties, or the lawyers, I should note. But with that, Mr. Beck, you can proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jeff Beck, and I represent the interested party interveners, the South Dakota Police Department officers, Sioux Falls Police Department officers, John Doe 1 and 2, and Sioux Falls Labor Lodge number 1. This matter is unique that it's captioned State versus Al-Madani, but my role here is to ask this court to uphold rights of crime victims under the South Dakota Constitution. When I received notice that the appeal was going to be held here at Augustana University, made me think about my last visit to campus. Last time I was here, I was with my then teenage daughter last summer for freshman tour. And while I was on the tour, I came across a bench over by the Madison Social Science Center. And on that bench was a name, and it was the name Eric Bunger. And I know that may not mean anything to the people on this court, but Eric Bunger was a classmate of mine in law school. And Eric and I had a bond. We had a similar trajectory in life. We both went into the military before doing our undergrad. We're both veterans of the Army. He was 82nd Airborne. I was combat medic in the 2nd Field Hospital. One of the classes that we shared together down at USD Law School was constitutional law. As soldiers, as lawyers, one of the things we shared was that understanding the right, the freedoms that we share come from the Constitution. Even though the state's captioned State versus Al-Madani, I come here on behalf of the interveners with a constitutional question before the court. The overarching matter for Mr. Al-Madani is he shot two Sioux Falls police officers, injured one, shot at another. He's charged, he's got 10 different felony counts. Two of them include attempted murder on law enforcement and 4 counts of aggravated assault on law enforcement officers. He's also facing a habitual offender statute and for 3 or more prior crimes of violence, and he's got 16 other pending felony cases across 4 counties, including a couple other attempted murder on law enforcement cases. It's from that comes this appeal. The issues before this court are really ones of first impression. And the first question becomes is whether or not law enforcement officer can be a victim under Marcy's law. The second question presented to this court is whether the circuit court erred when it determined that police officers 1 and 2 could not utilize South Dakota codified law 15-15A13 to request information be redacted from criminal court filings utilizing their protections as guaranteed under Marcy's law.
Can you help me understand the involvement of that rule? It's not a statute, it's denominated as a statute, it's not a statute, it's court rules. 15-15A13, as you say, it is a generic rule concerning redacting information. I'm trying to figure out why it's even in this case.
That's the vehicle. Well, why it's
but
even
why is it a vehicle? if we accept your argument, and that's what we're going to figure out, but if we accept your argument that there's a constitutional basis under sections 5 and 6 of Marcy's law, isn't that good enough? I mean, you don't have to have a rule or a statute if you make a Fourth Amendment claim to suppress evidence. You're just invoking the Constitution. What authority, what greater authority does a court rule provide a circuit court judge to do and grant the relief that you're asking for over and above the Constitution? In the hierarchy of these things, the Constitution would be at the top and the court rule would be somewhere below that. So help me understand, why is that rule even involved?
Because again, that's the vehicle by which we get here.
It's a vehicle. What kind of a vehicle? What do you mean by a vehicle? Why doesn't the Constitution just apply?
That's a great question. I wish that it would just apply. When we initially asked, when we knew this was, I was read in on the fact that prior practice had been not to disclose the law enforcement officers' names. We would treat them as victims. Received a call from the state's attorney's office, said, guess what, we're gonna release these indictments And we're going to list those officers' names. We're going to name them because we don't think that we've got the ability to do that practice. So we attempted a writ of mandamus. When that went before the trial court on that writ of mandamus, the trial court said, no, you have relief under 15, 15, 8, 13. That's your vehicle.
We're not reviewing that. And that's not in front of us. And unless you think we're somehow bound by that, and I know, you know, when you're practicing in the circuit court and you have these cases, and it was in a different file, but you have these cases, I understand you felt understandably bound by that. But to me, the mandamus ruling could be supported just on general principles of mandamus relief because there's no clear duty to act because Marcy's law requires, to my mind, a judicial determination about whether the information is the sort of information that could be used to locate or harass somebody. That's not clear enough, maybe, for mandamus. And so couldn't the mandamus ruling just be upheld on that? And in any event, we're not reviewing it. So back to my question. I know what the judge said about 15, 15A, 13 in the mandamus case. I'm saying here, why does it matter?
We have to, there has to be the mechanism to get it before the court to make that request. Because
so your theory,
the Constitution is...
Your theory is that the Constitution provides these officers as victims of a crime with the ability to have their names withheld, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so why doesn't that same constitutional provision provide the court with the authority to make that happen?
Motion to redact, based upon Marcy's law, caption, here comes these police officers invoking the Constitution. We want this relief.
And again, that's why it goes to a question of first impression. Going to your, Justice Salter, your question regarding the Fourth Amendment. The Constitution speaks. We have the Fourth Amendment here.
Do you believe that Marcy's law creates a categorical prohibition to the disclosure of the name or initial or any other kind of identifying information?
One of the cases that I cited when we look at Columbus Dispatch that came out after the appeal was filed, was after the trial court's ruling, the appeal was filed, Columbus Dispatch came out. And so I've very simple answer to your question, Justice Kaczynski, is it a resounding yes? Why? Because two hugely distinct differences between Marcy's law contained in South Dakota and the Florida statute that the trial court relied on in City of Tallahassee in juxtaposition to South Dakota and Ohio is a right to privacy. And that right to privacy is an overarching right to privacy. So Justice Salter asked the question, Fourth Amendment, and we say, well, shouldn't the Constitution speak for itself? Yes, it should, but when we have a question, we have to bring it to the court and we have to ask for interpretation.
So does the right that Marcy's law confers upon victims, does that have to be balanced in light of other constitutional provisions that might be out there?
Here we would argue no, because again, the limited request, so the Albanani's counsel would have you argue, yes, it should be a balancing test in juxtaposition to Albanani's Sixth Amendment right to confront those who bring charges against him. We would say that balancing test is unnecessary, or I would say that balancing...
What about a balancing test with respect to the First Amendment, the public's rights to know?
And if we did the... If we attempted to do a balancing test on the First Amendment, we would argue that again, if you look at that analysis in City Columbus Dispatch versus Columbus Police Department, in that case, they got into that sort of, I guess, the greater right possessed by that individual should supersede that right of, I say, a society, that individual protection should protect that right.
So let me ask you this, because I'm thinking about the next case, not just this one. And so we have two law enforcement officers here are maybe unique from, let's say my neighbor is assaulted, works for ABC company, nobody knows who he is, nobody's gonna be looking for him. Is every victim here and after, do they have a right under Marcy's law, if we uphold your right here, to come in and say, we want this redacted?
Absolutely.
Is there any limit to it?
No, there wouldn't be, because again, so Florida, if looking at Florida, even in the City of Tallahassee case, after the trial court ruled and before the appellate court ruled, they I say they, the state legislature, put in place a mechanism by which those requests can be made. So there's a whole procedure, and I kind of refer, I cited to it in my reply brief, that they go through to make those requests, and they follow a process.
But our language says the information could be used to locate or harass. And you know, you've made some showing here. There was another apparently case unrelated where an officer was located as a result of their name being, you know, but that's not going to be every case. So are people going to be trying to locate or harass my next door neighbor that works at ABC company that nobody knows who he is?
But that right would be up to your neighbor. If he feels that somebody would try to locate or harass him, then he could exercise his rights under Marcy law. The rights have to be invoked. So it's not a universal.
Right. But I mean, the language seems to suggest that maybe there's some sort of showing that somebody's actually going to try to locate them or harass them.
No, I would disagree, Your Honor.
You don't think that's required under the language?
No, Chief Justice, no. That if that information could be used, then you possess that right to have that information removed. But then we've got that wholesale overarching right to privacy, and that's why one of the best state that I would direct this court to would be Ohio to look at how that right to privacy.
But the constitutional provision doesn't say that the victims have the right to have their name withheld. It says the victims have the right to have withheld information that might lead to their harassment.
Correct. And so that's where when we look at that language, the constitutions are traditionally written very broadly. I mean, let's take a look at the Second Amendment. We say right to bear arms. We've been looking for definitions for that from the court for quite a long time. Same thing, Fourth Amendment.
So
and we have a series of cases.
Segueing to Justice Myron's question, do you believe you made a sufficient showing with the circuit court that the names or initials might be used to locate or harass the police officers?
So ask that again. Did I make a sufficient showing to the trial court?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think in any instance disclosing a name or a initial of a victim can be used to locate or harass them? Are you saying that applies across the board?
Yeah, if in a charging document, if let's say for this example, it's a an attempted murder case.
Well, what if the name is John Smith and you're in Sioux Falls? I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Do you need to make some sort of a showing to the circuit court or whichever court listens to your arguments regarding redaction that the name and initials can actually be used to locate or harass the victims as the Marcy's laws requires?
Justice Kaczynski, I would disagree that we would have to provide a sufficient showing. The constitutional protection is privacy and the right to have that information that could be. We don't have to show a nexus
on how
it could be.
So you think Section 6, then, of Marcy's Law is more broad and more encompassing than Section 5 and swallows it up?
Section 6
talks about privacy. Section 5 talks about the fact that the disclosure may be used to locate or harass.
Yeah, Section 5 talks about the disclosure of information about the victim that could be used to locate or harass. Again, I don't believe there's a showing. In Section 6, it's just a wholesale right to privacy.
You think that swallows Section 5?
No.
Is the right to privacy broader than in Section 6 than it is in Section 5?
Section 5 says this is the information that we've got the ability to remove or request to be removed from those publicly filed documents. And under 6, on a right to privacy, there it gives the right, but then it also, the language goes on and talks about the interviews, depositions, some other discovery requests, and some limitations that can be done, and the rights contained in those specific activities. But no, I don't believe it swallows it up, that they've got a right to privacy. It still has to be invoked by that victim. You can have victims that maybe they don't care. Maybe they don't want to have
Mr. Beck, let me ask you this as your time winds down. So a hot take here. Maybe this isn't the definitive Marcy's Law privacy personal information case because the way you have positioned your arguments contemplates full disclosure at trial, where the right of confrontation would apply, not before trial. It contemplates unredacted information provided to the defendant as a consequence of whatever, a due process right to present a full defense, perhaps, whatever. Maybe the next case will be different. Because would you agree with me that if a victim came in and said, you know, I just, none of it. I don't want my name on anything, nothing, ever, not going to happen. That might be a different case. More difficult case, perhaps, than this one. What's your thought?
Could be. And again, that's why I say we don't have to even get into that balancing test argument when the question was presented. Why? Because here, this was just public filings that we didn't want that information for public consumption. When we look at what can be done today for social media to look it up, the ability to harass, the case that I cited, that I talked about in Minnehaha County with the protection orders, that came from a name. The simple release of that officer's name allowed that.
I was trying to find that. Where was that mentioned in the trial court?
Protection order case?
Correct. I saw in your brief, was it also mentioned to the trial court? Was there sort of circling back to Justice Kaczynski's question, did you make some sort of proffer on that, some sort of information on that was presented?
If it's not in the transcript, then no, I didn't, Your Honor.
I believe you did argue it to the trial judge.
Say that again.
I believe you did argue that to the trial judge.
Did I?
Yes.
All right.
But was that in the nature of proffer, evidence? What was that? Just talking about it?
Well, again, the discussion came up regarding the information, name versus information versus identity. And so that's where the argument is that simply by the release of that name, sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Ms. Beck, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Kylie Beck. I'm here alongside my co-counsel, Emily Herbert, on behalf of our client, Samir Albadani.
Ms. Beck, I just have a quick question just to frame the issues. Are you conceding that law enforcement officers can be victims?
Justice, I don't believe that that's something that the court needs to address in order to determine the issues before it here today. It was not addressed by the lower court.
Well, you may still have to answer the question.
I don't believe that that has any bearing on this decision here. I think that the issue before the court is limited to whether or not the circuit court properly interpreted Marcy's law.
But if we take your position that law enforcement officers cannot be victims, then why are we even here?
Well, given that Marcy's law is a constitutional right, I don't believe that Marcy's law carves out in its plain language any sort of exception for someone, whether they're law enforcement or a non-law enforcement citizen.
So you believe it applies to law enforcement officers?
I believe that the plain language of Marcy's law does not differentiate different classes or types of victims.
Well, you argued pretty vociferously down below that it doesn't apply to law enforcement officers. Your brief is a little bit more muted, but it does indicate that it doesn't specifically include, or is silent rather, on whether or not law enforcement officers are victims. And so is it your position that they are or aren't? I mean, I think it's a yes or no.
My brief was silent on that, as it was not an issue considered by the circuit court. I don't take a position on that issue, as it wasn't presented to the lower court in terms of supplemental briefing before this court now.
Well, you did present it to the lower court.
Yes.
The lower court just decided not to address that issue, but you did present it.
Correct. I apologize. I meant in the briefing for this court following the trial court's
decision. So you've abandoned
that
issue in front of this court?
I have, sticking to the narrow issue that was presented for appeal. The circuit court properly interpreted Marcy's law, and it did not abuse its discretion when it denied the appellant's motion to seal the officer names from public filings. We ask this court to affirm the trial court's decision. Specifically, the plain language of subsection 5 of Marcy's law provides that a victim has the right upon request to prevent the disclosure to the public or to the defendant or anyone acting on behalf of the defendant in a criminal case, information or records that could be used to locate, harass the victim, victim's family, or information that could be disclose that's considered confidential.
But this case doesn't. This case doesn't involve implicate any attempt to keep from the defendant information about the victims or about the law enforcement officers. Correct.
Correct. In this specific case, myself, co-counsel, and my client are aware of the names of these officers, although that does not alleviate any constitutional concerns.
What is your interest then?
Or what is the interest?
On what basis do you, I mean, I know there was no objection to maybe your intervention or well, this is the case involving your client, but what's your interest in this?
Yes, Justice. While we acknowledge in this case in particular, we do know their names, particularly my client has the right to confront and cross-examine these individuals.
Not before trial, he doesn't.
Correct. At a public jury trial, and we concede that at this point we don't have a confrontation clause issue if we are able to confront them publicly at trial.
Well, you could have a pretrial issue, right? Let's say
yes.
You have a suppression issue.
Yes.
Officer testifies at the suppression issue. Are you precluded from using names in that hearing? Do you think under the view of the interveners in this case?
Yes, I believe so. We actually did have a motions hearing where that very issue did come to light, where we were not able to use the officers' names. Particularly as it affects my client, pre-trial is his right to present a complete defense. For example, we're not allowed to publicly disclose these names. So for example, if we were to want to seek information about these officers, whether it be via a subpoena or some sort of motion, we can't file that with these individuals' names in it. Therefore, we're not able to present a subpoena to whether it be a business, an organization with this individual's name, as that would be in violation of what's being requested here.
Does our decision, do you think, in an application of this, require us to look at case-specific scenarios like that?
No. I believe that the request being made here, as it would potentially apply to any case, is a violation of the Constitution. So I don't believe that a case-by-case basis review would be necessary.
Which provision of the Constitution?
Well, as it relates to situations, if it mirrored that of my client, it would be the right to present a complete defense, the right to fully investigate, due process type violations. I believe that there's concern when it comes time for trial, whether or not there would be a confrontation clause issue. Specifically, in the appellant's brief, they do make a footnote that notates that when it comes time to trial, whether or not the identities of the victims would become public would ultimately have to be litigated at that point in time. So clearly this is not a situation where this is all that's going to be requested. It's clear that the reach that's being sought after here will continue.
Well, we're considering the case after there was a wholesale denial, right? So we don't know. I mean, theoretically, there could be an order granting relief in part and denying it in part. So all of those considerations that you're articulating potentially could come to pass. We're just not reviewing that kind of an order, which makes me kind of wonder, should we even hazard too many guesses on the myriad of questions that could present themselves? And maybe as you said earlier, maybe in a different context, maybe the issue is narrower, right? Because maybe the question really is, did the circuit court err in determining essentially as a complete categorical bar, this just isn't gonna happen. So maybe the answer might be, pardon me, the answer might be, well, it could, reversed. And then remand it to the circuit court to figure out some of these concerns that you're articulating. We need a subpoena. Can we get exemptions for that? We've held in Waldner and Antuna that the protections of Marcy's law are not absolute. So maybe that's what this case could look like. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it goes back to the narrow issue of the misinterpretation of what Marcy's law even provides. What's being presented before this court here today is the idea that Marcy's law allows for a name to be kept out of public filings. That's not the point of Marcy's law.
What if a name can be used to locate or harass a victim? Isn't that exactly what Marcy's law prohibits?
Well, Justice, I think looking towards the Florida case that's directly on point here is quite telling. That case was also relied upon by the circuit court when it ultimately reached its decision here. Their language of Marcy's law is virtually identical to that of South Dakota.
And yet they read harass and locate conjunctively, not disjunctively, didn't they?
Correct.
No, it's an or. It should be disjunctive, it seems like. The text says locate or harass. The Florida court, in some ways, it's difficult to tell, but perhaps they read them conjunctively. It's one thing to locate. It's another thing to harass. That's what the court held.
And I believe that a name alone is not sufficient information. That a name alone, providing that, does not tell where someone is.
Is that something that the court, that the lower court, that would consider that? Is that something that should be argued to the lower court? In other words, a balancing test, and the court then decides, is this a name that could be used to locate or harass? What's the balancing with other constitutional provisions and so on?
I think that the lower court did make that consideration here when they ultimately held that the name does not include identifying information. As mentioned, that Florida case, they note that it does not categorically provide the right to withhold your name. Albeit a name is an identifier, it is not identifying information. It doesn't say where someone lives. It does not provide their phone number.
Does it require us to define the term harass, which could really encompass many things, maybe not just the ability to physically find where someone lives and go physically harass or take some type of conduct. You know, in this day and age with the, you know, social media, you have somebody's name. Are there other ways that someone can be harassed? Do we need to consider that?
I do not believe so. I believe that we have appropriate remedies in place when it comes to protection orders or potentially the criminal code to handle situations where individuals may be experiencing that sort of behavior. But
Marcy's law doesn't say, oh, hey, if this doesn't work out, go to another part of the law and get your relief there.
Correct.
Marcy's law says what it says. And it says you can't use this information to harass people or locate them. So maybe you can't locate them, but you might be able to harass them.
Marcy's law doesn't provide that a name is considered identifying information, though.
It doesn't have to, does it?
I think it's important to make that distinguishing characterization whether or not a name is
information or records. So why isn't your name information?
Well, I think the analysis to help better explain the position here is that specific section of the statute of Marcy's law explains that this request can be used to prevent disclosure to the public, the defendant, or the defendant's, or anyone acting on the defendant's behalf. So if we were to run with the idea that a name cannot be disclosed, that means that a defendant or the defendant's attorney would not be able to be provided this name based upon the language of this section of Marcy's law.
But there are ways the court can balance Marcy's right. We had to do that. Waldner was an example. So we've said that we have to apply this in the way that also balances the rights that were afforded with a defendant's constitutional rights. It seemed that was perhaps done here in terms of what was or was not, or what was already allowed. So why couldn't there be that type of balance and still protect a name in a public document?
I believe there was a balance presented through argument, at least as it relates to the idea of what identifying information is. We agree that this doesn't include releasing the address, the phone number, the email address of an individual, but just the mere name alone. It's important for a defendant to be able to have that, not specifically the defendant himself, but his counsel, to have that to be able to effectively argue and litigate and deal with any sort of pretrial motions or issues.
And you have that.
We do, but as mentioned, just us having it doesn't allow us to present our argument, doesn't allow us to present a complete defense. We can't send off subpoenas for information on these individuals because their names would be protected. We'd have to send off a subpoena for John Doe.
Could that also be, you know, if you had a protective order for whoever the subpoena is being issued to? I mean, there would be other ways, would there not, to still keep it from the public domain?
I think that there are other ways. I don't believe other ways are realistic. I think it creates...
But how could you know that? Because the parties are saying, I mean, this is an all or nothing proposition as this case comes to us. What if it's not? What if it's not all in with the names or all out with the names? What if, and our cases suggest this, what if it is some combination of things that's designed to contemplate everybody's interests? That could happen, couldn't it?
It could, and I think that...
But we wouldn't do that in this appeal. That would probably be something that the trial court uniquely situated as it is in this particular case and in other cases, could navigate through, right?
I think it's important for clarification upon the what appears to be vague language of Marcy's Law about what is identifying information.
But isn't, are you and maybe the circuit court reading Section 5 a little too narrowly? In other words, it says information that could be used. So your position is this name doesn't say anything about a person's location, right? But it could be used to locate somebody. So is the interpretation by the circuit court and what you're asking us to do here today, is that too narrow?
No, I do not believe it would be too narrow. Specifically when this court,
isn't somebody's name the first thing you look at when you're trying to locate them in today's age?
And I think that that's the issue here is what exactly is a name? You would need a name in order to pursue charges. You need a name to be able to investigate. While I understand the position is the name could be used to locate or harass, the sheer fact of a name alone is not identifying. It's actions that could take place afterwards, which none of that has been alleged here.
The term from the Constitution is not identifying information. It's information.
Correct.
Surely people's names would fit into the category of information. And if there's a criticism that information is too broad, I guess that'll have to be taken up with the voters because they enacted, through direct democracy, Marcy's Law. So we just have to deal with what we've got. But why wouldn't a name fit within the broad category of information? Textually.
I think name is considered information, but for purposes of how it's being used in terms of Marcy's Law and its involvement in the criminal system weighed against the rights of a defendant, I believe that a name alone is not information that could be used to identify, locate, or harass. This, importantly to note, that we do have statutes that carve out cases or individuals whose names are not released. For example, juveniles, the statute requires that they be used by initials. My understanding is a recent rule change that will go into effect this summer, they'll just be called minor victim. We also, in those statutes, have the ability to keep names and filings confidential if it's a protection order that
doesn't that support
juvenile.
The theory that the world won't come to an end if some of this information is redacted because we do it in these other cases?
I believe it would still violate my client's constitutional rights, and it appears that my time is done.
Thank you, Ms. Beck. Mr. Beck, you may proceed with rebuttal.
I guess I struggle with the defendant Albanani's position that inclusion of the victim's name or initials is not information that could be used to locate or harass him. Before I came to court, I typed in my name in a search engine, not somewhere where I had put in information, not a Facebook, a Snapchat, an Instagram, generic search engine. Wasn't one I had to pay for, 100% came off public consumption. I got my full name and alias, birth year and month, all addresses from current to back to when I lived with my parents 40 years ago. I got a bird's eye photograph of my house, including when I purchased it, what my current equity is, my past and current phone number, current and past email addresses, all my relatives, including my spouse, my kids, my siblings' parents, known associates, and it had a hyperlink to each one of them, current employment history, educational background, and a history of my military service.
None of that's in front of the trial court.
What's that?
None of that was in front of the trial court.
Well, I'm trying to.
No, I know.
But you
I can't
introduce evidence.
Right. Yeah, to remove us from the fact that information, when the question is the name a piece of information that could be used to locate or harass?
Let me ask you this question, though. Among the interests that may be or may not be competing interests in terms of how we have to sort this out, we've heard from Ms. Beck about concerns that the defendant has. Nobody has asserted an interest that in somehow, some way, this impacts the public's right to know. And maybe we don't have the right parties for that. I understand that. But nobody has said, oh, this violates a portion of, the open court provision of our Constitution or the First Amendment or something like that. No one said that. It's not really in front of us. The Attorney General has said, we're not going to take a position in any of this. what do we do with that? Is that just not part of this case?
That it's not before,
well, the public's right to know. Does that figure into anything?
The public's right to know?
The public's right to
know. When you, and when you look at the public's right to know, I guess that would go to some earlier questions regarding maybe a First Amendment. And we would say that the public's right to know does not take away a constitutional protection. The privacy
is it even in front of us to consider it? That's my question.
Is it even in front of you to consider?
Yes. I mean, no one has said anything about it.
No.
What do we do with that?
If it's not before the court, then no, you wouldn't have to consider that.
Okay.
Very simple, Justice.
Okay.
And so as, when we look at that information, again, our request here is that the trial court's decision should be reversed. There's no balancing test needed. When Justice Savini asked a question earlier, and when we talk about protective orders or encountering cases in court, there's remedies. We can bring those things up. So if there is a suppression hearing, like Chief Justice Jensen brought up, when we go to that suppression hearing,
but isn't that a de facto balancing test? That's what I'm trying to understand. You're trying to carve out exceptions. Isn't that a de facto balancing test that you're engaging in then?
For incident specific. So that would be on a very specific incident. So again, one thing that that this court really needs to bear in mind is that Marcy's Law is an opt-in. So to exercise those rights, you have to make that request. It's a common practice now, and all of the members of this court have sat in trial courts and seen reports, and they've got, and the Attorney General's office has the Save-In Network. They ask that victim, they give them a Marcy's Law card, and they have to opt in. And when they opt in, now they've exercised those rights. So in some of those limited circumstances, we would have to do those balancing tests when maybe an individual wants to exercise that right, and the defendant would say, well, now you're infringing upon my rights. So then now we carve that out to figure out how to address that incident-specific issue, but...
So, but your position has preempted some of that here, which is fine. I mean, that's your position. But you know, on one hand, you're saying, well, this is categorically off limits. This name business, this is, as I said to Ms. Beck, kind of all or nothing, or whatever. But really, it's not. And your argument really conveys that, because you have self-imposed certain limits, you know, unredacted information for the defendant, sure. Police officers testify at trial, absolutely fair game. All of that stuff. Now you've just unilaterally, your clients have just by themselves said, you know, that's fair or whatever you've said. But let's say you didn't say that. Couldn't a court make those determinations and say, yeah, it's not all or nothing? And your argument sort of conveys that. You're not pressing the outer limits of a categorical bar on their names just by virtue of your argument. It's more modest than that. Couldn't a court do that as well, even if someone's unwilling to do it, as you and your clients apparently are? Couldn't the court say, yeah, no, that's too much. You know, they need to have the names at a Fourth Amendment suppression hearing. That's fair.
Yes, the court could, and that's what we asked the court to do, and it refused. And that's why we had to come to this court to say, no, trial court, you had the authority to do that. You had the authority, incident specific, to have that information removed because it was constitutionally protected, and that those crime victims invoked their rights. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. That will conclude the case. We'll be in recess for a few minutes.